You're listening to Green Building and Sustainable Development.
Hello, this is Farron Dancer. Welcome to Talk Radio 1260 KTRC, and this is Green Building and Sustainable Development on a beautiful Saturday afternoon here in Santa Fe. And in the studio today, I have a very distinguished guest, Douglas Stewart. Douglas is a climate activist and very involved in environmental issues and also an award-winning playwright. And welcome to the studio, Douglas.
How are you? Thanks for being here. I'm looking forward to enjoying it.
Well, I hope you do.
Yeah, I will.
Well, thank you. One of the most profound issues of our lifetime is one that's kind of upon us right now, and that's the issue of climate. And Douglas is very well versed in this realm, and I'd like to just introduce this topic. Douglas, how do you see climate and climate change being addressed right now, and what are some of the big issues that people need to be aware of?
Well, one of the big issues, of course, having just gone through an election, is the changes in political power. And we'll have to see how that works out and so on. But we know there will be changes just from statements that people that were elected were making during their campaign. Mm-hmm. So that will be one issue. The other issue is change, and it's accelerating change. Almost every scientist, no matter what scientific area they're in working on the environment and climate change, they're saying this is accelerating faster than we thought it would. So that's one of the issues also to take into account in terms of planning, that you can't plan for a static situation. It's changing.
Yeah, and one of the sad facts of our time is the denial issue that's going on in terms of the politicians and the leadership in the country and the media, somewhat corporate-controlled media, if I will. And so there's a lot of attention being pulled away from this very hot topic, hot in terms of global warming. And it's unfortunate, but also it's important for people to feel empowered to seek the truth about these issues. And I really suggest people tune off Fox News as a source of information and dig a little deeper and really get into these issues, and I know you have.
Well, that's absolutely true. And one of the things I think that is empowering, is certainly as I think through it and talk with others, is the things that our culture has done, the things that we have changed. Slavery, for example, civil rights, prohibition, and so on. As a people, we have changed a lot of very important things that we felt were important, and we did it. So that can be done by people.
Well, and I think, as you and I discussed earlier, Doug, is belief systems and what people tend to believe. And it's important when we just adopt a belief system that we have all the facts in front of us, and that sometimes is a difficult situation in this time and place.
Well, that's certainly true. And our belief systems, as a psychologist, that's one of the things that I'm really concerned about. Belief systems get developed in all sorts of different ways. Some of it as a very small child, seeing what our parents do or our relatives. As we get a little older, the people that we hang around with and so on, we develop belief systems over a period of time. And what we know is that if something is outside my belief system, I am either going to deny it or not pay any attention to it or avoid it because it just does not feel comfortable emotionally. Right. And ultimately, emotions are the bottom line.
Well, and speaking about parents as models, most of us grew up in the time of cheap fossil fuel, not any consciousness around energy conservation or any of the issues that we're dealing with now. So we modeled after our parents who, for the most part, left lights on and left, windows open and didn't really address conservation as an issue because, cheap fossil fuel was exactly that. Mm-hmm. And so, it's interesting in some of my work with students and youngsters, and when we did a whole summit recently with the educational outreach for school children, encouraging them to go home and kind of re-educate their parents. So it's kind of a reverse thing that's going on now, and I'm kind of happy to be a part of that.
Well, and of course, children have a simpler world than we adults do. Although their world is getting more complex than it was, too.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe them, just call them on their cell phone and ask them.
Yeah. But they won't pick up unless they remove the earbuds from their ears in the meanwhile.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah,
that's
so
right.
That's part of the complexity, I think, of this technology.
Yeah. And as Bill McKibben said, it's also something that is diversive from really staying focused all the time. It's distracting, the amount of technology and the other issues in our world right now. And so as when we look at something as complex as the environment changing in and of itself and add the complexity of the other things that cause diversion, it gets very complicated to try and make solutions. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that Doug brought along today are some great quotes on global climate change, and I love some of these, so I'm going to read one of them right now. This is from former President Bill Clinton. "I am not one of those who is pessimistic about the future of the world. Assuming we get off our butts and do something about climate change in a timely fashion." And that's our former President Bill Clinton. So here we are. You know, we need to be active. Somewhat the corporate powers that be would love for us to just be sort of vacant on that level. It makes makes for an easier time to get their policies pushed through and to keep the status quo.
And this is a time when we can't do that. We don't have the time available as a climate changes and all the repercussions that will have and the impacts and the effects and so on. We don't have time to wait around for that sort of thing to happen. We will have to take initiative ourselves. As somebody said, top down is dead, from bottom up is now alive.
Yeah, that was just came out in Louise Pape's climate report.
That's right.
The top down is dead. And we're seeing that now in terms of this last election, and some of the progress that was made in terms of government policy and so on is already looking to be turned on its ear.
Yes, the committee that's been that Nancy Pelosi started to be aware of global climate change and global warming 4 years ago, and so on, what it was able to accomplish. Now the incoming folks have said that we're going to abolish that. That's gone. It's cost too much money.
Yeah.
It's going to cost too much money if we don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting to see who's pulling the strings on some of these budget issues. But, you know, when it comes to global warming and it comes to climate, you know, some of the language is now being addressed. I talked to Leanne Leith from the Conservation Voters New Mexico, and we have a new legislature coming in. We've lost some of our legislators that were pro-environmental. Mm-hmm. And so we have a tougher hill to climb in this upcoming session and in the couple of years to come. But at the same time, we have to find common ground with people who don't necessarily share our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important that we find that common ground and somehow get some of these issues to continue to move forward.
And not only the common ground, but we need to keep any of the legislators, even those who are already in office that think this way, but the ones that are new in office and don't think that way, we need to keep, I hate to use pressure, that doesn't sound right quite, but to keep them aware of what the situation is and how it is changing and what the people are thinking about that. And that is keeping legislators at all levels, you know, right from our own county clear on up to the top, keeping them aware of a changing situation that if we don't do something about will be increasingly threatening.
Well, and my buddy Gino here in the studio this morning just brought up the fact that we're coming out of the warmest decade in history.
That's true. And it looks like that this year may be the warmest year in history, 2010. It's very close. It's going to be very close at the top. It's going to be one, two, or three, but they're going to be very close together, according to the latest scientific measurements.
And unfortunately, in terms of the media, I know that there was this thing this past year, a very severe climate-related issue that came down in Pakistan, where the heat wave and the drought and everything was so intense. I mean, countless thousands of people were affected. And we heard very little, if anything, about it in our media. And so I think, again, it's important for people to dig around, not looking for bad news necessarily, but to just be attuned to this issue and to understand that because we have a slightly different political climate coming up here, that that issue didn't go away. And they would love us to believe that it's not a very pertinent thing, or it did go away, but we know otherwise.
Yeah, so that, that era of this particular year where we had this terrible floods in Pakistan, an area the size of England was flooded in Pakistan, which was terrible from that standpoint, and what it did with food and everything else, and they're still recovering. And then Russia at the same time from the same system, according to the scientists. It was a very high altitude situation where two things collided and stalled, and that did what it did in Russia was take it up to heat levels that they had never experienced before. They lost so much of their wheat crop, and a lot of the world uses Russian wheat. They lost so much of it, they stopped exporting wheat as of July and said, we can't export anymore until the end of the year. We need it for ourselves.
Yeah. And so, they're one of the biggest suppliers of wheat for the whole,
yes,
planet.
Yes, yes.
Another neat thing that Doug brought to the studio today is good climate change news. So we're not just, you know, dwelling on doom and gloom. And there's a whole list of really encouraging things that are happening in terms of good climate change news. And I'll just read one of them right now. Local power. Many communities around the globe are looking at or are already starting on producing their own electric power from alternative power, solar systems, and distributing it through their own already existing grids. This keeps the source of money in the local economy, and the Danes are already along the line exporting local excess to neighboring countries. And I have a wonderful quote here. It's an ancient Indian proverb. Treat the earth well. It was not given to you by your parents. It was loaned to you by your children. So think about that. You know, what's going to happen for our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren as time goes by? And what's your take on that, Doug?
Well, I'm sometimes amazed by the people that deny that anything is happening in the area of climate change and the environment. I have to wonder, don't they have children? Don't they have grandchildren, nieces, nephews that they would be concerned about? And so I don't know whether it's the fact that they don't know enough about it to be concerned, or they can't deal with it at all, so they just completely deny it. I'm not sure what that is, but nonetheless, it happens.
Well, and something that I've experienced over the years, when I last saw Al Gore's presentation down in Albuquerque almost 3 years ago, and after The Inconvenient Truth came out and a lot of people got really aware of the issue or the problem, it's such a scary phenomenon. Most people go into denial, I believe, based on the fact that it freaks them out.
Mm.
And what Al Gore and his army of climate professionals came up with even 3 years ago was the fear-based approach to getting people motivated was not working. People were getting obviously depressed or freaked out and went into denial, which meant they didn't do anything. Mm. They just figured, well, I'm going to stay kind of comfortable as long as I can and the heck with the rest of it. So interestingly enough, at the end of Al's talk, he talked about promoting an evolution of consciousness as the approach that he would be taking. And I think he's been doing more and more of that as time goes by, because the awareness and the knowledge that we need to put out there in the world and get people to buy into is a far better approach than freaking them out.
Well, that's true. If you think back in history a little bit, say maybe into the late 1800s when you're having a war between two nations, everybody's on foot and so on. And if the king rides out in front of his army and says, boy, have we got a tough one today. I mean, that other army is really good, guys.
Right.
Your army's going to turn and run.
Right, because you've already planted the seed that they're going to lose.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a very good example. We want to plant a seed here about winning, about the eventual outcome that we would like to see for the planet, and get people to understand that it's not a lost cause. It could be if we all, you know, remain lethargic in the coming years. But in essence, we need to put our thoughts into the solution and into how we can create the future that we really want to see happening.
And we're a culture that has done that. We have taken on significant challenges, as I said earlier, and succeeded. And so we know we can do that, if we put our minds to it.
We had an issue right here in Santa Fe County just a couple of years ago, and it was the oil and gas drilling phenomenon, where they're going to come into Galisteo Basin and just have at it. And the potential environmental impact in terms of the groundwater, in terms of the air quality, the general pollution, and not to mention the aesthetic of seeing our beautiful landscape just trashed by oil rigs and so on.
And the property values.
I know that brought a lot of people to the table. You were very much involved in that process, weren't you, Doc?
Well, when that kind of thing is only a medium bike ride from your house, it really gets your attention. And that was part of, I think, why we had so much public attention, because it was local. It was literally in our backyard. And so we really pitched in on that. And we learned some things from that have proven very valuable as we work on environment and climate change issues also, which is working with legislators in a very cooperative way and such, because they're the ones that can do policy and do legislation, but we're the ones that can back them up and support them, do a lot of the groundwork for them, so on, and help their staffs and work closely with their staffs and so on. And we accomplished a lot on our oil and gas situation by using that approach. We learned a lot from the oil and gas situation we're using now.
Well, you know, we tend to be a very bottom line culture. Bottom line starting with the pocketbook. And that's why when gas goes up to $4.50 or $5 a gallon, everybody starts getting real concerned and starts looking at alternatives or renewables. And then when the prices drop, we've seen what that phenomenon causes, you know, just a basic malaise of lethargy that sets over the populace, and we're back to, you know, the status quo.
Yeah, you go out and take the for sale sign off your big pickup truck. Yeah,
right. Oh, I can afford to drive this again.
Now.
Right.
Yeah.
But the issue, you know, really extends beyond the cost of fossil fuel, and you know, fossil fuels, be it gasoline or natural gas, coal, all of it is so subsidized by our government. You know, we tend to think, well, why should I go renewable when it's so cheap? Well, part of why it remains cheap is that it's subsidized with our tax dollars. You know, gasoline in Europe is $6-7 a gallon. And that's not, you know, just a fluke. That's the reality of what it really costs in those areas. And so we have sort of a spoiled populace that's very consumer-based. And here we are, you know. But it's going to go beyond that bottom line at some point, and that's the shift in consciousness that people need to make as far as their carbon footprint and you know, walking gently on this planet.
Well, and fuel for vehicles is a major issue in terms of the fact that the supply of oil, as such, to convert into gasoline. We talk about peak oil, and that there is a decline in that. That's pretty well established now by the people that work in that industry.
Did it peak in 1970-something or another?
The United States, they think 19, even a little earlier. Yeah.
Early 70s,
I think. Yeah. But the other thing is that because the oil industry knew that, they also realized that the price was going to go up. So instead of investing in refining companies and so on.
Further refining capacity.
Further refining it, yeah. They started buying back their own stock. So that they know that their company would increase in value as that price went up significantly. So there may be a time, is what they're saying. There may be a time, not very long time, they think, but there may be a dip in the supply of gasoline itself, because as the demand goes up, which it is, they may not have the supplies from the refineries that they would need.
Well, that's a perfect setup for another good news climate change report, and that is electric vehicles and planes. Most automobile companies around the globe are now working on a variety of electric vehicles. The Nissan Leaf and the Chevrolet Volt should be on the market by the end of this year, and they are being introduced right now as we speak. And both Chinese and Indian electrics will probably follow them shortly. A solar-powered plane has just completed testing, and engineers are now considering uses and manufacturing systems. So there is some promising technology on the horizon.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to go to break one more time here on KTRC Talk Radio 1260, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Farron Dancer on Talk Radio 1260 KTRC, and I'm in the studio with my guest, Doug Stewart. And I'm going to open this segment with another one of these great global climate change quotes. And this one is from the 6th century BC, the Tao Te Ching. Not knowing is true knowledge. Presuming to know is a disease. So, hey. Well, I don't know that I totally buy into not knowing is true knowledge, but I think presumption is something to be looked at. What's your take?
I would say, not to be too direct and so on, but we do have some diseased people in the culture at this point in not knowing and presuming to know. Yeah,
and that presumption is based on some fairly skewed perspectives, statistics. We do know that the corporate powers pay mega millions of dollars for these think tanks that cook up schematics and research phenomenon and stuff and put it out through the media, disclaiming certain things or claiming other things. And we also know that there's a huge consensus of our scientific worldwide community that think differently. How have you seen that come down, Doug?
Well, in terms of scientific community, there's no question about that now. Virtually every major scientific organization worldwide has agreed on the fact that this is happening, it is happening now, it is accelerating, and chances are that if we don't do something, it could be very, very serious. There isn't any longer any question about that. One of the issues, of course, that comes up for debate is, well, are we causing that? Is that a human-caused situation, or is it a natural situation? Because obviously the Earth has changed all sorts of climates over millions of years.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the issues. But then the question that needs to be asked is, well, so what? Who caused it? What are you going to do about it? And
right.
That's the key question.
So we have the melting ice caps.
Mm-hmm.
We have a rise in ocean levels. We have a change in temperatures of the Gulf Stream and so on and so forth, and polar bears being stranded on ice blocks and just the visual of that. But you're absolutely right. It doesn't really matter if it was man-made or not. Mm-hmm. We have to deal with some of these realities that are mm-hmm. coming down the pike. And there was a question that was posed. It's like, do we talk about preparing for this as opposed to whether it exists or not, or who's to blame, mm-hmm. or is this right or wrong? Mm-hmm. And it seems like that communities or municipalities that are presented, wasn't there something in South Florida or in Florida where there was some denial that turned into some real activism?
Well, yeah, one of the things is that they're looking more carefully at their shorelines, for example, in South Florida, because that is one of the first areas in the United States that would have a problem as sea level rises. So you have to decide, if you've got Miami in danger of a rising sea, what do we do? Do we build levees? Do we evacuate Miami? What do we need to do? No matter who caused it, mm-hmm. it's happening. And then what do you need to do? And that's the kind of planning that is now beginning to take place, especially along our Atlantic seaboard, which is lower in terms of access by the oceans than the Pacific coast is.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
So that's the more immediate threat, is the Atlantic seaboard.
Yes, especially even the Northeast, because of the way the Earth spins, it actually builds pressure in the northeastern part of the United States. The water level will be higher there than it will be in Florida.
Yeah. So good climate change news. Gardening. There is a rapidly increased amount of local gardening of all descriptions. Even creative methods of urban gardening are becoming more widespread. And I know from attending a lot of green building seminars, there's a phenomenon going across the country called green roofs, for instance. And it started out as a way of reducing energy usage by keeping a building cooler, but also now people are stepping up and actually planting things on those mm-hmm. roofs that they can consume and they can use.
And I've been on the one in Portland, which was one of the early ones and so on. And it's just fascinating to be up, four, five, six stories high above above all those little folks down below, and there you are in a garden.
Yeah,
it's very creative, and it really is, as you say, catching on across the country.
Well, and this is one of a number of efforts from the grassroots, and that's a topic we'll, I think, really address in our final segment, what's going on in the grassroots. But currently, you know, there's sustainable energy is being really promoted in many sectors. We've seen other countries, like Sweden is a great example. They've actually set a policy in place to be carbon neutral by 2020 for the entire country. We have our 2030 protocol here in the United States would be, you know, zero carbon from the building sector by 2030. But here's a society that's just made this policy across the board that we're going to be carbon neutral. And what's happened for their economy is with that commitment, all kinds of renewable companies are starting up. Their economy is moving in that direction. And a number of other countries are experiencing the same thing.
And I just read of a small town in Wales, and they're going to go them one better. They're going to say, we are going to be carbon, not only neutral, carbon negative within 15 years.
So how does one become carbon negative?
You start to develop more energies and so on than you're using. And of course, there's an island in Scandinavia where they're now doing so well. They're exporting their energy to nearby countries and so on, too. Yeah.
So they're creating a surplus, basically.
Creating a surplus, yeah.
And we have that same potential in our building sector when we produce a net zero energy home, and then we can go the next level and produce energy producing buildings, whereby we can feed back into the grid more energy than we consume, which takes the pressure off the coal-burning power plants and peak demand and a bunch of other aspects of energy distribution. So, you know, that's the mindset now. The technologies are evolving very rapidly, and we have the potential to turn this thing around. But again, it's the knowledge, information, and the outreach that we can provide to get people on board.
It takes the mindset of an entrepreneur who thinks, okay, I've got this, but if I can make it do even more, then I'm really in business. Then it's really happening.
You know, Douglas, I have in your bio here that you're an award-winning playwright. and I know that given your passion around the climate and the environment, can you just give me an idea of some of the plays that you've written?
Well, two major ones that are being produced around the country now. One of them is a very short play, and so on, so it can be done even by, you know, children and so on. It's really fun. St. Peter and Mother Earth are in the Heavenly Cafe talking about things, and he wants to find out what's going on down there on Earth. And so it's about that, how that develops. The one that is a much longer play, a regular length play, can be, is Mother Earth versus World's People. Mother Earth has gotten sick and tired of what World's People are doing to her in terms, as she says, of limiting her ability to have a fruitful life. And so she's taken them to the court.
She took them to court.
She's taking them to court. Yep.
She's a vengeful mother then.
Yeah, that's right. She said, I've had enough of this. This thing has gone too far. And there are 11 possible witnesses at the trial that she can call if she wants to. So you can make the play any length that you want to. And it's a fun play, but the scientific information in it is dead accurate. And that one now, I'm just very pleased about it. It is on the wiki, which is the resource list for 350.org, Bill McKibben's organization, which means that anybody with a computer and access to the internet anywhere in the world at any time can have access to it and use it. There's no copyright on it deliberately, so it can be used by anybody. I suggest you want to make changes, make your changes. Go ahead. Don't have to ask. Just go for it.
Wow.
But that's a technology thing. You know, you know, 11-year-old would understand that, but as somebody quite a bit older than that, I'm still getting used to that.
Well, we all are, you know, somewhat limited in our capacities with these evolving technologies and so on. But that's a beautiful thing that you're not looking to capitalize. You're looking to use this as a medium to put it out there and educate the public in general.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Bill McKibben asked not all that long ago. He said, given our situation, where is the art? Where are the poems? Where are the symphonies? Where are the operas about the situation that involves an entire culture, the entire civilization? And so we're picking up on that. There are all sorts of ways to present information. Yeah, and we want to be as creative about that as we can.
Well, and here's another aspect of where technology really can serve, you know, the evolution of our consciousness and spreading the word on, you know, some of what's real and what's happening, and also some of the solutions that we can provide. And the internet, it is just an amazing tool for that.
Well, as you know, over 1,000 of us just on November 20th were in the Santa Fe River Basin dry in Tone, showing, trying to emphasize the climate situation in terms of making it look like from above a flowing river by flipping from brown to blue as these people went down the stream. And so that was photographed from 435 miles up from a satellite. And the movies are amazing.
Can people access, that was a beautiful art display, and to use, you know, art as the mm-hmm. sort of focus of an environmental issue was something I think more and more people could relate mm-hmm. to, right? Mm-hmm. And it mm-hmm. brought a lot of people to bear.
That's true.
And Doug, we have been talking about climate change. We've been talking about the fact that there's been publicity put out mm-hmm. now that mm-hmm. the top-down approach is going bye-bye pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. We had a fairly progressive and active government here over the last several years, but the political climate has changed tremendously. And even during those years of a lot of federal incentives and a lot of policy that was pro-environment, it seemed to me that the real differences were being made by the people from the grassroots.
That's true, yes. Yes.
And now it's going to even be more so, I
yes,
believe.
It must be.
Right here, just outside of Santa Fe, you and I both have mm-hmm. been very involved in the El Dorado Sustainable Community. And there's a lot of different programs that we've introduced and been a part of in El Dorado. And quite a lot of very positive change is taking place.
That's true. That's absolutely true. We have an advantage out there that's an older community, and it started out in the 70s, you know, as one that was using solar then, which was passive solar because we didn't have the technology. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, so there's that history that we'd like to work back to.
Well, and doing a lot of remodeling and mm-hmm. out in El Dorado over the years, I have removed a lot of solar thermal collectors and things from the 70s and early 80s
yeah.
that, you know, were well-intended yeah. but didn't necessarily work that well and have been sitting sort yeah. of dormant for many years. But the thrust for El Dorado initially was a passive solar mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. And most of the homes built out there in the early phases, late 70s into the 80s, were passive solar designs mm-hmm. and really a model for the rest of the country.
It was. That's true.
And so now here we are. We went through a period of a couple of decades whereby a sort of a different mentality took hold. Mm-hmm. And that was one of property rights and property values and a covenant-driven board of directors out there that saw the maintaining of the status quo as mm-hmm. being the most important issue. And have we seen a shift in that regard?
Oh, yes. Yes, we have. And like I say, we're drawing on our history and saying, yes, now given what we've got available, we can do a lot more in terms of making that a sustainable community. And in fact, we're even ambitious enough to think that we might be able to make that a model sustainable community that then we could be of assistance to all other communities in our area, too, and what we've been able to do and how we went about it.
Well, just to mention a couple of the specifics that's going on in El Dorado, is there's several committees working on modifying covenant guidelines, basically to ensure that alternative energy sources can be not only used by residents, mm-hmm. and we have, you know, some solar rights laws on the books, but a lot of homeowners associations, you know, starting with El Dorado, over the years have not made renewable energy necessarily a priority. And even though we have rights and access to the sun, there was a mindset for many years that solar was ugly, it decreased your property values, and we need to hide solar installations at all costs. And that's something that we're addressing right now in El Dorado.
Yeah, our concern was that we don't want the covenants and the guidelines that go with them to get in the way of residents using the latest technology to develop energy. As we're talking about, can a home become an energy producer as well as an energy user? Mm-hmm. And we want to be sure that that can happen with the technology that's now available.
Well, and there was also a mindset that solar installations is more of a luxury, or it's more of something that somebody that has some extra money and is, you know, kind of a feel-good, wanting to do the right thing kind of person is going to put on their home. But now we're realizing, especially the source of our electricity in El Dorado and in Santa Fe in general, coming from the Four Corners coal-burning power plant, usage of energy and the aspect of that that we take for granted doesn't really impact us in terms of the source where it comes from, but San Juan County, where the Four Corners coal burning power plants reside, is got some serious health issues. It's the sixth most CO2 producing county in the entire United States.
Yeah. Yes.
And the health issues in the Navajo Nation and in the populace in general is very, very profound. And when we start to consider a more holistic perspective in terms of energy and who it's impacting and how and why, then the move towards renewables becomes not just a feel-good, but a necessity.
Well, one of the things in terms of, as scientists really have looked at this phenomenon as it developed, they realize that we get emissions from China as far into our country as Nevada. So that whatever happens up in San Juan County goes a long ways beyond San Juan County itself. So we're looking at a worldwide event here. And we're learning more about it all the time because we've had to now.
Well, and that's part of the shift in consciousness. Mm-hmm. We're not all living in some isolated little mm-hmm. bubble just where we can do whatever we want to do and it doesn't impact the whole. Mm-hmm. Everything that happens impacts the whole, and that's part of our responsibility to be aware of that. And you know, being a model community is the goal for many of us out there. And, you know, it's not just renewable energy guidelines, but there's a team of what we call carbon busters. And mm-hmm. these people, free of charge, will go around to homes in El Dorado and do an energy modeling analysis mm-hmm. and see where people are losing energy and then, offering tips and inputs on how they can weatherize their homes and save energy and lessen their carbon.
Yeah, I'm one of the carbon busters. Yeah.
And you look like a carbon buster.
Yeah, and it is fascinating, and it helps develop neighborhoods and friends and so on. When everybody's working to help other folks, that's just a very good situation. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's I think in the spirit of what sort of the new paradigm mm-hmm. needs mm-hmm. to become, that we're looking out for each other and we're not just looking out for ourselves. And I think that's part of this shift of consciousness. And when we look at real community, that's what real community is in its essence. It's not just local economy, grow food, renewable energy. Well, it's all of these things. Mm-hmm. But it's also just an awareness that we're all in this together and that we can really make a difference in looking out for our neighbors.
And coming from a part of the country, Southern Ohio, which was farm-oriented, that's the way people got together and helped each other in a farm community. Yeah. That was the understanding, yes.
Well, we may be going back to the future in that
yes.
regard. Well, I just want to thank all of you listeners out there for being a part of this show today. And we look forward to further participation in the future. And right now, spend the rest of your Saturday doing something fun for yourself, your family, and for the environment. This is Farron Dancer, Talk Radio 1260, KTRC, and we'll catch you later.